Today and tomorrow are the last 2 days we're going to be featuring this very special booklet, What the Bible Says About Israel and Its Land, and it's just $5. Order yours today. And I'm going to give you our contact info again in just a moment. But before that, we'd like to express our sincere gratitude. We're so thankful for all of you who steadfastly remember this ministry on two fronts. First, your prayers. They serve as a source of strength and inspiration and encouragement, guiding our efforts to spread the transformative message of the gospel to the unsaved and to bring the Bible to believers on radio and online. Thank you for praying for hope for today. Now, second, your financial contributions. They play a vital role in sustaining our mission by keeping us on the air. Your generosity ensures that we continue to reach individuals in need of hope and spiritual guidance that we find in God's Word. As we move forward, may I humbly ask for your continued support of this ministry. Now, if you feel called to support this ministry with prayer or a gift, let us know by writing us at Hope for Today, Box 3927, Tustin, California, 92781. In Canada at Box 15011, RPO Seven Oaks, Abbotsford, BC, V2S8P1. You can also get a hold of us on the phone calling 875-BIBLE. That's 800-75-2425. In Canada, call 888-75-BIBLE. And of course, you can always visit our brand new, totally revamped website, davidhawking.org. Well, as promised, here's David to bring today's time to a close.
Well, for sure, there's no greater prophet than John the Baptist, and our Lord Jesus makes that clear in our passage that we're studying now. There's some fabulous quotations also from the Old Testament that our Lord uses to make his point. And we know in John chapter 3 that John the Baptist indicated a part of the great qualities and attributes of his life when he said of the Lord, "He must increase, but I must decrease." That could be a motto for every one of us as believers, that the Lord be glorified and magnified and honored in our life, but that we be humble before him and not give glory to ourselves or boast in our own abilities, talents, or accomplishments. God bless you.
Next time, our teacher continues his verse-by-verse study through the Gospel of Luke with day two of our message called No Greater Prophet. And we hope you can join us then, and be sure to invite a friend to listen along with you right here on Hope for Today.
When contacting this program, mention you heard it on KKXX, 930 AM.
You're listening to Family Talk, the radio broadcasting division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I am that James Dobson, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us today.
Every marriage goes through periods where it seems like you just can't get on the same page and you and your spouse are constantly arguing. It's absolutely necessary for couples to tackle these conflicts in a healthy way and to fight for their relationships instead of with their spouses.
For too many couples, too much of the time, they go through their married life walking on eggshells. And there's a sense that they're in a minefield together. They don't know exactly when they're going to step on a mine next, but they know it's not too far from now. And what that leads to is an inability just to relax in your marriage. I mean, it's very clear what people want most from their marriage is a best friend and a safe haven, and that's the hope that we start out with. When you begin to associate the presence of your partner with conflict, that's just going 180 from what people want.
You have tuned to Family Talk, a division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, alongside your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. In just a moment, we'll conclude Dr. Dobson's timeless conversation with Drs. Gary Smalley and Scott Stanley. Over the last 2 days, they've been addressing healthy as well as destructive ways conflict is handled in marriages. Their conversations focused on Dr. Stanley's research, which followed hundreds of couples for 12 full years. Through this study, Dr. Stanley's team identified key warning signs that predicted which couples would get divorced and which would stay married. Today, you'll hear Drs. Stanley and Smalley field genuine questions from couples who were in attendance that day. Let's get started with the first question for these marital experts on this edition of Family Talk.
My question is, and I hope I don't sound controversial, but how do you tie the two together where I was always taught that you don't sleep on your anger? And how does that work with taking a time out or dealing with it at a later time?
My sense of that is this, that if a couple has gotten practiced at really following up, when they've had to take a time out, and maybe it's not a good time to talk. For example, I don't think most any couple should talk about anything important past 11 at night. I mean, that just doesn't make a lot of sense. If it's just not a good time, if they're good at following through that next day, we said we'd talk at 8 after dinner, here we are, we're sitting down, we're talking. When people follow through, they're not going to bed angry because it's easier to lay it aside if you know it's going to be picked up constructively. But if you don't follow through, the whole thing falls apart as far as the value of time out.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Anger in marriage is usually a product of frustration. There's a circumstance you can't abide. You know, there are situations you just can't live with, and you feel like you can't let it pass. Well, here is a mechanism to say, I'm not going to let it pass, but I don't have to deal with it right now, which reduces frustration and reduces anger.
That's right.
And you come back to it when the biochemistry has settled down, right?
Absolutely.
Plus,
right.
You have the safety of knowing that when you do get together, you have a structured method that's going to keep you calm and eliminate all four of those basic factors for risk.
Yeah, it's really not unlike conflict in society at large.
That's
you
right.
know, if you and your neighbor live on the frontier in 1870 and there's no law, you know, there is no sheriff, you're much more likely to fight with each other, maybe even shoot it out at the OK Corral, than if there is a mechanism for coming to an agreement.
That's right.
You know, you can't steal my peaches, you know, and I can't go in your garage and get your lawnmower. We have to live within certain rules and certain laws, and they're needed in marriage too.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay, next question.
Hi. It kind of hit home your the defense about withdrawal. I think that's one that I would rather keep peace at all costs. And so when things kind of come up, I might have a tendency to do that. How about a better way of handling that?
A couple of things that are very important. One is on the female side of a male withdrawer, it's important for women to understand that men are really trying usually not to fight. And it's not that they don't care. It's not that they don't love their wives. Just as you said, trying to keep the peace. Of course, the problem is this strategy is terrible because it really ticks pursuers off. I mean, it gets them very angry. And if you want to not keep the peace, this is a great way to do it. Now, the trick is this, and this is where safety comes in part as Gary talked about. If as a couple you have times and ways to deal with conflicts constructively, withdrawers don't have near as much need to withdraw. You know, once that withdrawer has a sense, well, I know what to do about this. I know how to handle this. I know if I can gently move toward her, and maybe not even doing the speaker-listener technique, but I'm just going to start paraphrasing her. In fact, what does a really good customer service agent do at a department store if you come in angry? They listen. Okay, so you're really frustrated that this thing broke after you used it twice. I mean, that calms people down. That calms down the physiology. That gets things moving in the right direction. If the withdrawer has a sense of something better to do, they can try to shift into it, and that keeps it safer.
Scott, you know, I read some years back that what a man typically most wants when he comes home at night is tranquility.
That's right.
More than anything else. What a woman often most wants is ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
And those collide.
That's right. You know? That's right. One wants to talk and the other. And it's not even, this is sort of the trick. I don't know how this is working out. Maybe you have a comment with you and Norma. Many men will talk a lot more than women think they will if it's clear it's a safe topic.
Yeah.
You know, so even if that man comes home, I'm talked out, I don't want to really talk a lot tonight. If it's a sense of a conversation that's just, this isn't going to touch any big issues, this isn't going to be conflictual, a lot of women could be surprised at how talkative men could be when it feels safe.
I talked to a man who... was married to a rather ill-tempered woman, and he talked about the need to not irritate her. It was like being in a room with a very angry bobcat. Yeah. You would move very slowly, wouldn't you? You wouldn't jump at the bobcat.
That's right.
Because you get scratched across the nose,
right.
Or maybe worse.
Yeah.
And so some of the withdrawal is a fear of that kind of conflict, which I really believe some men fear can become physical and they'll do something they'll regret.
I think you're right.
And see, in our marriage with Norm and me, it's not always that. It's reverse. I'm the one that wants to communicate and get this out in the open. She's more of an introvert. She's the one that has felt unsafe with me at times.
Huh.
So she will be the one that'll say, you know, I'm going to withdraw from this. And so she got good at that. But that doesn't solve the problem.
That's right.
So I've heard her say, who knows how many times, that I'm fearful of you at times. I don't feel safe around you.
Emotional.
Even though you've never been physical.
No, I've never done anything to her like that. But verbally, see, I can get energetic about getting something solved and get into an issue and get it exposed. And she doesn't always feel safe. But see, I'm always in front of the public on something, and she doesn't always feel real safe with me. I have the person and I will all share everything and anything. You know, here's my bank balance this month. You know, she's uncomfortable. She has more control about that. So in our conversations, I will say, do the same thing with her.
Right.
I'll just start talking about everything's on my mind. Mm. And she may feel a little uneasy. And at times she'll say to me, I feel very uncomfortable with this.
And after 30 years in this business,
exactly. We
can still learn, can't we?
Absolutely.
Okay, next question.
Wanted to kind of build on the first gentleman's question and a little bit of what you've been already commenting on. First of all, about how men seem to need the rules of things to better deal with the problem. And with the panel of men there,
we find
the need for a woman's
stack.
Point of view. I'm not speaking for all women, but I know for myself the need for a woman to ventilate, to kind of get to the solution quicker and not to put off the problem, fearing that it will procrastinate and then you're still having to deal with your emotional state as tomorrow may come and it's a busy world and things come in, especially with young children. There's not always the accommodation of a babysitter to take this time out, although it's necessary because for a woman, the emotional part just really does build up. And I was just wondering, you know, the timeout sounds really nice, and it all sounds nice and manly and comfortable for the man.
Yeah, we have just been put in our
place.
The
women's
show is tomorrow.
There's an aspect of, you know, your cycle and your emotional state and the validation of saying she is emotional and she needs that at this time. So the timeout isn't a good idea, although both have to deal with their emotional state at the time as well. So if you want to make a comment on that.
Yeah, let me comment about this. And obviously this comes up a lot. It's really good that you're asking the question. It's an important question. And just even on the physiological level, just to make this point, you know, for men, their physiology starts to calm down as soon as they've pulled back. For women, their physiology really starts to roll then because that is very frustrating. And I can get into a little more detail about how we teach timeout. We try to get couples to think about timeout this way, not only this idea, gee, we could come back and talk about it tomorrow. But timeout can also be used, much like in sports, to stop it when it's not going the right way and to shift gears and get going the right direction. So we teach couples that when one says, I think we need a timeout here, or why don't we take a timeout, that they have a choice they can make right then. One choice is to shift into communicating more constructively right then, right immediately, just as what you're expressing you would often like, but more productively so that it's not just going to go on and do something stupid in the relationship that adds to the damage. Or if they're both so hot, or if one's so hot that there's just no way this is going to be a good time, to recognize that if it's just a bad time, it's just a bad time, and we better come back to it in a couple hours or tomorrow.
Scott, if one of the two can be mature and level-headed, you can accomplish so much, can't you?
It helps
a
lot.
If one of the two can parent the other. Mm-hmm. You know, if a man coming home finds his wife just so intensely frustrated, the washing machine overflowed, and he didn't call when he said he was going to, and she's just so angry, if he can really just have the maturity to sit down and say, you know, I know there's a lot going on inside of you. Why don't you tell me?
That's right.
And take the hit. So what? Take the hit.
And you don't get to the other stuff if you're more sensitive to that anyway. You know, if people can just be much more caring and, you know, how are you doing? How was your day? And listening to each other and listening for the frustration, then you don't get a lot of this escalation in the first place.
The danger is when you're both in the same hot condition at once.
Right. See, and I think what she just said is that wife has a very valid feeling.
That's right.
So that if I do take the time to say, you are valid, I do want to hear your feelings, I do love you, can we share it after dinner? Or if it's right now, that's great. If you need to say it right now. But that would be a form then of validating her, right?
Yep.
Okay, the next question.
I'd like to remain anonymous about the question I'm going to ask you. My question has to deal with my in-laws. Excuse me. They've been married for 43 years, and they have great potential. But I see when you talked about the negative interpretation, what could we do? What can I do? Or can we do anything to help them?
I'll go back to something I said before just to be realistic about this because this is a very difficult problem. Nobody can change that pattern but the person that has it. This is not something we can change about another because there's just no way around and through it. The filter is so great. However, sometimes if we have a good enough relationship with somebody we see doing this with another, we can gently but steadfastly say things like, you know, I noticed you really got irritated there when she just came in and asked you for a drink of water. I don't get what that's about. Was there something about that that was negative? I mean, where we can sort of plant seeds of questions, or maybe they're even telling a story. Boy, you can't believe what he did the other night. You know, blah, you know, on goes the story, and you're hearing this, and you wonder where we can gently nudge or question. You know, I'm not sure why you're seeing that way. That doesn't sound that negative to me. Or that could they have had a different motive?
Scott, would your videos be helpful cold turkey for a family like that?
We did devise the video set as well as the book to be standalone. You know, we do these workshops and train others to do the workshops, but they do stand alone. On something as specific as that, there's some in there on the negative interpretations, but that's not a huge portion of the videos. In some way, I think the book has more information on that might be a little more potent.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, next question.
My question is, my wife likes to come home and vent about a lot of things. And this, what it ends up being is me wanting to rescue her, give her solutions, give her advice, letting her know it's okay, but giving her the solution to her problem so she wouldn't be hurt because of work or whatever. And I find out that she doesn't want an answer.
That's right.
And
she just wants to listen.
That's right. She just wants to vent it out and let me listen. But it's difficult for me just to listen, not to, you know, talk back, I guess. How do I get rid of that cycle?
You've heard that one before, haven't you, Scott?
Absolutely. And in fact, we believe pretty strongly that for many couples, 80, we're just guessing here, but, you know, maybe 80% of the things that they believe are problems aren't things that need to be solved. They just need to be aired out and heard. In this case, it's very good that you two have gotten this clear between you that she really wants to be heard. She doesn't need you to solve things. It might help you to do sort of some minimal paraphrasing. Just, wow, that sounds frustrating. Or, oh, I hear that. You know, what was that like then? And it sounds like that was really a difficult part. Well, you're just feeding back a little bit from her. So you have something to say, but what you have to say shows that you're really actively listening and you're interested. And the other thing you might try to do is shift your mindset to understanding that listening is really doing something.
Yes.
That you aren't being passive. You're doing something very powerful by listening.
You know, in the early days of my own counseling experience, when I was at Children's Hospital, there was a woman that would come see me when she was just ready to explode. And she usually didn't have an appointment. She'd just show up because she was just so intensely frustrated and angry at her husband and so on. And I would deal with her in the wrong way. And I would give her explanations and solutions. And I found she'd just get madder and madder. And you don't understand what I'm feeling. And then I realized, as this gentleman has said, that's not what she came to me for. And so the next time she came, I just said, tell me more. But that must really be tough. Why do you feel that way? I just let her talk. And after about 45 minutes, she'd take a handkerchief out of her purse and blow her nose and say, I can't tell you, I appreciate you.
Right.
You have helped me so much today. And I hadn't said anything.
That's
I hadn't given her a single solution. But that's not what she came to me for.
That's right.
You know, as a man, what you just said really communicates. Because you said two things that I thought were great. First of all, you said about 80%, you know, give or take, of marital struggles and so on are just listening to your mate and understanding them, and that would solve the whole thing to begin with. But you said the listening is something very active that a man can do that does that is helpful and that does bring, you know, a solution to the whole problem. I have to know that I'm doing something. And so it's always been in the past at times I'd be solving things.
That's right.
So I thought it was a great question.
Yeah, very good question.
Just being understood is helpful.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Not changing anything, just knowing another human being understands where I am.
And letting people, if they're really upset, be upset.
Next question.
I've got a question related to if you're in a conflict and after all said and done, you still don't see eye to eye on an issue, do you have any advice for helping a couple get back together emotionally after that? And I assume I'm not the only one that's ever experienced that.
Yeah, there's a. Let me give you the context how I usually answer this question, because we also teach a problem solving method that's pretty specific, and I'll just give you the highlight of it, which is we teach people to discuss first and then try to solve. So have a good problem discussion and not move in to try to get solutions until they've had good discussions. And then there's some other steps that we recommend in that. But sometimes couples come to us and say, you know, we've tried this over and over again. We've done this. We understand each other perfectly, and we just flat out disagree. This one doesn't look like it's getting solved. What I've suggested, which seems to help some couples move forward, which is this. Why don't you go back through and this time solve this question? What are we going to do to protect the rest of what's really great about our marriage from this issue that we can't agree about right now?
Good.
To try to get the couple joining together with the problem now is this, not us, and we need to solve this to protect the us part. And that shift can really get couples going sometimes when they thought they were totally stuck.
Especially on those absolutely unresolvable, non-negotiable issues.
That's right.
Are we going to have another child? Are we going to move?
That's right.
What are we going to do about your parents who have to come live with us? Or those kinds of things. They can tear up that's good.
That's right. And and you get that sense going of it's me versus you instead of us. And this is a way to get it back to what about us? How are we going to protect us from this dilemma?
Next question.
Hi. I have a particularly giving husband, and he helped me through a really difficult year this year. I lost my father, and he's got in this mode of protecting me, and I'm ready to get out of that mode. And I as I listen to you, I kind of think of it as a part of maybe he's withdrawing a little bit. I need to get on, you know, to the next phase. And he's got some issues that he's having to deal with, and he's not sharing those with me.
Mm-hmm. How is it that he protects you that's causing difficulty?
I guess he would be overprotective of me in a lot of circumstances where he doesn't need to be anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been several months, and, you know, he's got some issues at work going on that we should be sharing together and talking about.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel in general like you two can talk about sensitive things, or is it kind of hard to do?
Yeah, we always have been able to.
And I think this is what you talk about next, is how you're feeling that you kind of want to change the mode again a bit and get free of some of this pattern, where you really share together what's it been like to go through this time and how does he view the pattern. But one of the things that we see, and we believe real strongly, that if it's not safe, and it sounds like it's pretty safe for you too, which is really good, and I mean emotionally safe now, if it's not safe, couples can't talk about what's really going on. You might be able to tell real clearly what's going on because of the anger and the defensiveness, but they can't talk. But when it's safe, a couple can talk about just about anything in terms of if the commitment's clear and the love is clear and there's some skills to communicate well, I think I would bank on the sense of safety that you have to bring this up directly.
Okay.
Yeah, then I hear that you said there's some things going on at work. Mm-hmm. You'd like to share that burden with him,
right.
But he's protecting you by not sharing those things, but you want to now re-enter his world. Is that what you were saying earlier?
That's right.
Yeah, and you know,
that brings up another thing that comes out in marriage is people want to feel like they make a difference in the life of their partner. And in some way, that's a very positive way that you could maybe frame it to him is, hey, I want to be helping you out again too here. I feel like you've been given to me so much for a while here. You know, people need to know that they make a difference to their spouse.
Well, thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you.
Has been wonderful. Gary, I appreciate so much that you're bringing Scott and his work to our attention. And the book and the video series that's been written, Fighting for Your Marriage, written actually by four professionals, right?
Three. Howard Markman, Scott Stanley, which is me, and Susan Blumberg.
Well, there's an open invitation to both you gentlemen to come back anytime you want to be here.
Thank you.
And the response of our gallery, I think, speaks for itself. There are an awful lot of people who can benefit from these understandings. Let's do it again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it is our prayer here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute that these three programs we've aired during the